welcome to the Scottish Housing News Podcast with me, Kieran Finlay, and my co-host, Jimmy Black. Gas boilers no more is the cry from the Scottish Government, which has just published new rules that will see all new properties applying for a building warrant from April 2024 having to utilise zero direct emissions heating systems. Now, this is not a brand new announcement. The Government has consulted on these proposals in 2021 and again in 2022. But the announcement has been received with praise and objections in equal measure, so today we will focus on what it could mean in practice. Later, Jimmy will talk to Ross Armstrong, the Chief Executive of Warmworks, which has big news of its own to discuss. But first, we're joined by Richard Orr, the Head of Asset and Regeneration at Riverclyde Homes. Welcome, Richard, to the podcast. What's your understanding of what the Scottish Government has just announced?
Well, firstly, thanks for having me on, Kieran. We have to accept that, first of all, this is a new build. So if we look at the stats, 80% of the buildings by 2050 are already built. So it's going to be a small proportion, and an even smaller proportion of that affecting social housing. And, you know, to my mind, there are, I suppose, two arguments to make. The first one about the current price of gas, which is of course a variable, but the current price of gas and the questions around just transition, and the secondary aspect about the need for decarbonisation and to wean ourselves off fossil fuels in a wider sense. And I think actually my understanding is how we're framing and how we're having the conversation as a sector actually perhaps slightly misses the point, because it's not about either of those polar positions. It's about the parameters that we can change and the opportunities that come from that. And I think there is an opportunity within the challenges that the sector face. You know, it can be encapsulated and crystallised in this type of change, because actually, if we take the approach of the just transition creates a challenge because of the current price of gas, when we're talking about new build, there is an opportunity to redesign the buildings in a way which lowers that demand in the first instance. Of course, the Scottish Government touches on passive house principles, for example, as the direction of travel. But if we truly design buildings which lower that demand, the question of, you know, and that means that the buildings that are currently being built, those that are already procured typically to be standard and that are running off a gas boiler, will still be paying an awful lot more than those properly designed to reduce demand regardless of the heating source that's into it. So I think if we consider the challenge in a wider sense and reframe the conversation, I think that there's an opportunity for us as a sector to consider that as an opportunity and a way forward once we do that.
I think it's definitely the line of travel with policy, and there's some house builders now who won't build another property with a gas boiler anyway before this came in. Where are Riverclyde Homes on this? What's your most recent developments been like, and what's your upcoming ones going to look like?
We've actually just completed a fairly extensive build programme, culminating with St Stephen's and James Watt Dock, which is just across from our office, and they're attractive, modern, typically flatted accommodation buildings. Some great stuff in there in terms of sensory gardens and dementia-friendly blocks, and some great stuff in there. But from an energy point of view, they are B-banded, and consumption is probably not what we would redesign and look to implement if we were looking to do that now. At the current time, we've taken the decision to hold off on new builds to reevaluate, and to take our investment and put that into retrofitting the stock that we've got. So we've got about 6,000 homes currently, and our focus for the coming years is to consider a variety of land options merged with the construct of heat and energy networks and how we deliver those, working alongside the local authority on LHEs, and then reconsider what needs to be built new. But I know for a fact just now it won't be what's currently being built and what's been replicated. It will take that design-led approach towards, you know, reducing fuel poverty. And then in actual fact, you know, what we've done is we're in the process of writing our own standard, which considers many other metrics, and that would affect our retrofit and new build. So that would go beyond just that operational carbon. That would include a whole bunch of other measures, including embodied carbon, including climate resilience and circularity in the economy, you know, allowing that opportunity for innovation. So, you know, that will be our focus when we come back to reinstate new build in the years ahead.
Given what you've just said, this question doesn't really apply to you, but from your discussions in the sector, do you think others will be rushing to get their building warrant applications in before the 1st of April to get existing schemes on existing cost bases off the ground before the ban?
I would hope not. I think you know, if I'm sure there will be those which are close to deadline and which from a budget perspective maybe feel like that's required, but I think it would be the wrong thing to do. I think generally, you know, the right thing to do is to review the approach to that and consider a wider source of outcomes, and that source of outcomes, as I say, should actually start now to be part of our thinking to go beyond just operational carbon. It should start to consider a whole bunch of other measures that allows the sector to take on those more macro opportunities that exist for us and our community. You know, our communities is where the people that will service the future tech come from. So, you know, how do we procure and ensure that those things are being delivered? There's some incredible work happening at places like BEST. So how do we as a sector collaborate with other external bodies to make sure that the training and delivery and to the right standard and a broader agreement about what those standards and what those metrics should be has to come before that. But I'm not sure the sector in my conversations with them are necessarily, you know, I don't think any of us are on the same page with each other, you know, and I think there's a great deal of harmonisation. I say that is not a word of criticism. I think there's a great deal of harmonisation around what we want and what we expect those outcomes to be in a wider sense, new build and retrofit.
Can we just talk about your tenants and customers and what all of this means, the retrofitting part of it? How can you ensure that these new developments and retrofitting a house that already maybe has a gas boiler with an electric heating system of some kind won't actually create more fuel poverty?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think there are a whole bunch of metrics that we need to consider through the retrofit, and taking a design-led approach allows us to make sure that we're fully measuring the impact on the tenants, and thinking about the future as well, as you know, as we consider climate resilience and the types of changes that are going to come, not just with the market prices of electricity and gas, but actually as the world changes, what does that mean for cooling and, you know, water use and all of these other metrics. So taking a design-led approach and building to the standard that we are writing to, I think is a key cornerstone for us in terms of how we come to deliver that. I think the heating choice though for us in practical terms, you know, we have one fairly interesting project which is about scalability of model, and we have a quarter villa block just now which is a net zero build, which we expect to create heating costs even at the current market rate of sub £1,000 a year, quite considerably less if they stay on gas boilers. And in essence what we're saying is there is a model here, but we're not going to take the gas boilers out. So we're going to make it ready for heat pumps. Now isn't the time to make that transition. And through the retrofit, there becomes a point where it becomes almost plug and play. Later, we will come back and take off what's there because the system is ready, and we'll take that fabric first approach. But it's about understanding how all of those dynamics, ventilation, all of those things fit through that design to make sure that if fabric's first, what's second? You know, for us, that we don't want to create those secondary problems for our tenants by designing it and delivering it in the wrong order. And it's quite as simple as that for us just now. And as I say, that's our scalable model. We will use that property as a show home to take owners on the journey, to take other tenants on the journey. It's an education piece because the you know, the heat pumps that they will have when we come to deliver those, a whole bunch of other interesting products will be in the home, whether that be low temp skirting board heating, a whole bunch of products for people to come in and look at, touch, understand, be educated on the controls for them to take that handover of their home, but also to take those shared ownership owners on that journey to see the product choices, the the principles of asset management we're building into the decision-making model to say, look, we're going with lead instead of plastic because actually that's the longer-term investment choice. And it's really about how do we finance and deliver that model. So for us, that heating, the heating is just one component of all of that decision-making. But you know, the core of the question is absolutely accurate to say, we don't want to end up in a position where we're transitioning people into fuel poverty because we think we're doing the right thing. And that all comes down to the very smart people that design it for us.
Just before we round up here, Richard, if you were speaking to Patrick Harvey, the Net Zero Buildings Minister, to Paul McLennan, the Housing Minister, what is it that you would be asking for to help with this? Is it just funding? What information could they give? What policies could they bring in?
You know, my view is probably slightly out of step with a lot of my peers in this, in the context that, you know, the policy framework that's there, which sets out the fact we need to transition to net zero, is fine. I don't think we need more policy. I think the question to my mind, because all of the products to get us to net zero exist, the questions are more around the alignment of and the delivery of and the training of the workforce and all of these other metrics that as a sector we have the opportunity to help shape and influence. I think the question of finance and funding is almost a separate concept, because as you say, every archetype will have a different cost. But I think we can probably broadly accept that all organisations are going to have a mixture of grant. And of course, there are questions there and conversations there for the government about those metrics. You know, within the devolved powers, that's a very difficult thing for the government to really flex on. But those conversations around, back to a UK level, about, you know, what are the opportunities to reconsider VAT as an outcome, for example. You know, it's not to say that more funding doesn't help, but I think the other side of that conversation is, what are the other funding streams that are there in terms of you know, place-based approach. So is there opportunities for organisations to measure the impact it has on its customers and the consequential impact that has on, for example, local health board costs? And the other alternative, the thing that I've kind of been speaking about for a wee while, is the idea of bringing in the carbon offsets and the carbon credits into that marketplace as well, and using those opportunities to reduce the amount of individual private finance which is going to form the bulk of the cost. And then that's about how do we do that.
So with me now is Ross Armstrong from the Warm Works organisation. They've been responsible for the Warmer Homes Scotland scheme, and they've just landed potentially another 7 years of funding for that. Ross, we've got some questions for you about the Scottish Government's announcement on not having gas boilers in new build homes as from April 2024. What's the point of the new policy? Can you explain that to me?
Yes, there's an important distinction to be made between the challenge that exists in terms of decarbonising homes in the new build sector and the challenge that's there to decarbonise homes in retrofitting existing homes. And the announcement with respect to new build gives the industry a very clear indication as to what the government wants to achieve and what the government expects in terms of standard for new builds as the move towards decarbonised home in that sector. For Warmworks, you know, our business, our organisation, we're very much focused on the retrofit challenge, which is a different challenge. But it's just about making sure that the intention, which is for all home heating to be decarbonised over the next few years, that we're making sure that the industry is moving in the same direction.
If we took a very short-term view of this, we could say that what we're doing is to get to zero emissions and zero carbon. We are installing heating systems in people's homes, many of whom live in fuel poverty, which are going to be more expensive to run than the ones they have, because arguably none of the new heating systems, like air source heat pumps and certainly direct electric heating, none of them are going to be cheaper than gas boilers. So how do we get over this conundrum? Because I know we have to do this, but how do we do it without plunging more people into fuel poverty?
So there's a couple of points there. The first thing is, the scheme that Warmworks runs, the Warmer Homes Scotland scheme, is absolutely focused on fuel poverty. So that scheme is about finding a package of energy efficiency improvements, some to the heating system, some to the fabric of the building, like insulation. And what that will do is and bring down energy costs. So the Warm Homes Scotland scheme, because it's a fuel poverty scheme, is primarily focused on reducing energy costs. So there's nothing that we would do under that scheme that would have the effect of increasing people's bills. We do install renewable technologies like heat pumps in increasing numbers across Scotland. But the key to it, when you're retrofitting a home or putting a heat pump in a home, is making sure that the fabric of that building is maximised in terms of its efficiency so that the heat pump can run and not increase running costs. So the technology's there. In many applications, a heat pump could replace a gas boiler even and make a generate a lower running cost than the gas boiler. But the key to a heat pump is not just to assume that heat pumps are a panacea that we're going to just install everywhere en masse. It's making sure that when they are fitted, the property is at the right level of efficiency, the household is on the right tariff and the right payment arrangements to get the most out of that system, because it is absolutely possible to reduce running costs whilst having that zero carbon heating in place.
Okay, but there are going to be some heating systems which can't be replaced by air source heat pumps and in buildings that really can't be brought up to the kind of energy efficiency standards that we'd really like.
Yeah.
And so some housing associations, for example, might choose to go for high heat retention storage heaters and mention storage heaters to any tenant and they won't be happy because they know that storage heaters are going to be expensive. I mean, electricity is more expensive than gas, quite simply. So what do we do about retrofitting buildings which are really not going to come up to the kind of modern standards that we're seeking to achieve?
It's a good question. I mean, I've been in this industry for a long time and retrofitting homes and trying to make them more energy efficient. And when I first got into this industry about 10, 15 years ago, storage heaters were seen as this old technology that was kind of dying out and expensive to run and costly and not very flexible. Actually, high heat retention heaters, people need to kind of leave that perception of the 70s and 80s electric storage heaters behind, because high heat retention storage heaters are far more efficient, they are cheaper to run, and they have got a place in the low carbon heating mix that the government wants to drive towards. There's a couple of things that need to be tackled alongside this though, because just putting this better product in by itself won't necessarily do it. The first thing is, you talked about the imbalance between gas prices and electricity prices. That's because a lot of the taxes and a lot of the charges that are in place through energy bills all fall onto electricity pricing, because everyone has electricity. The government does need to look at the fact that loading those charges onto the electric element of the bill creates an artificially high price for electric versus gas. If that was more evenly done, then the price of electricity would be lower and the price of gas would be more realistic. So the government, working with Ofgem and the industry, needs to see what it can do to rebalance gas and electricity pricing so that electricity isn't artificially high. And the second thing, and this is really important, high heat retention storage heating can absolutely be used as effectively heat batteries. And if the energy supply industry were to be more innovative in terms of offering better time of use tariffs, so everyone's familiar with Economy 7 and things like that, but really, that's just the tip of the iceberg. The energy supply industry could, if it was encouraged to do so or regulated to do so, introduce more flexible tariffs, more time of use tariffs that would make these high heat retention storage heaters an even more attractive option for people in terms of using them more flexibly to save money and lower the running costs. But that needs intervention from the supply industry. And we do need intervention from government on gas and electricity pricing so that the product is better. Absolutely, the product is better, but there's more that we can be doing around the sides of those products to make it better again.
Which suggests that you could actually use storage heaters as a way of storing electricity that you've produced through solar panels.
100%, yeah. I mean, the technology and the way high heat retention heaters are now in terms of their efficiency make the product into something that, you know, we're talking about electric vehicles, we're talking about batteries that are in people's home for storing electricity that's generated from solar panels. There's no reason why storage heating couldn't become part of that flexibility mix if the conditions created around it were right.
Now, there was the Scottish Energy Insights and Coordination Group, and they involved a whole lot of consumer-type organisations. and they reckoned that tenants and other consumers would need advice to be able to operate these new systems correctly. And to be able to, certainly in terms of tenant participation, I would imagine if you're going to try and negotiate with your landlord to get the heating system that will suit, then you need to have some independent expertise. Is there going to be enough expert advice for tenants and other consumers so that they can really participate in these decisions and not just get landed with whatever their landlord decides suits them best?
Yeah, advice is absolutely key. It's a critical part of the mix. And in Scotland, obviously, there's the Home Energy Scotland advice line funded by the Scottish Government, free. Anybody can call Home Energy Scotland for advice at any point, any time. And their web services are very good as well. But advice happens at every step of the journey. It happens up front when people aren't sure what they can do, what they could change to, how it will work and who to contact or where to get funding or interest-free loans. But it has to continue through the process. So when someone is talking to an installer or an assessor that's going to design what's going into the system, that advice has to follow through. And then when the system is installed and commissioned, handed over, what we do as Warmworks in the programmes that we run is make sure that all of the installers that we contract with have that mandatory duty to give a tenant householder the full explanation as to how to optimise that system. Because some of the new technology is pretty complex, pretty advanced. Investing that time in helping people to optimise it is worthwhile. And one of the things that you sometimes hear, and I really think it's a dangerous thing that people will kind of assume, is that people who are on a low income or are at risk of fuel poverty, you know, that trying to go into more complex technologies and explain them, that it doesn't work in that community. I mean, I think that's nonsense. I think people who are struggling or people who have to manage their money are probably the best budgeters that you'll ever meet. And if you talk to those people properly about how to optimise the system, get the right tariff, make sure that they're operating at the right time and things like that and in the right way, yeah, people will listen because there's money to be saved, and that absolutely hits the hardest in those households.
Ross, tell me, you're about to set off another tranche of funding for the Warmer Home Scotland scheme. So tell me what you can do for people through that scheme.
So the Warm Home Scotland scheme is a scheme that is grant funding available to people who qualify for the funding. Now, all of the eligibility criteria and things are online, but in principle, it's about people who are in or at risk of fuel poverty. And that's defined in two ways. One, the people or persons living in the household have to be in receipt of a qualifying benefit or a combination of benefits. And the second is that the property itself has to be below a certain standard of energy efficiency. So what the government's effectively saying is they provide grants to improve the energy efficiency of homes that are already relatively inefficient and have people living in them who are on a low income and or have a disability. So those groups are the most likely to be in or at risk of fuel poverty. And that's the way the scheme is set up. And then the next phase of the scheme, which will launch later this year, really is opening up the range of help and the amount of help that people can get, so that if people need an air source heat pump or could benefit from an air source heat pump, but they need the fabric of the building upgraded as well, you know, we'll be able to do that and do the insulation at the same time as these zero carbon heating measures, which, as I mentioned, those zero carbon heating measures really rely on the insulation and the fabric of the building being sound in the first place.
And presumably you still have a number of projects with RSLs, other landlords, bespoke projects, like you did, for example, with Angus Housing Association.
Yeah, so it isn't just Warmer Home Scotland that Warmworks does. We have a range of projects all across the UK. We work in North East England, South East England, and right across Scotland with social landlords in Dumfries and Galloway, in the Borders. And as you mentioned, we had a very successful project with Angus Housing Association as well. So each two targets, social landlords all across Scotland are kind of thinking, right, how do we get these more ambitious zero carbon technologies into our each two discussions? And how do we make sure that we can get tenants supported and we can access funding to help us with it? You know, Warmworks is playing an active role in that space as well, because we're helping landlords to access funding. We're helping them to write plans for how they take the housing stock through that process of decarbonising it. And we're supporting the tenants to make sure that when those technologies are fitted, they're fitted to the right standard by accredited, registered installers, and that they know that we'll be there to help them as and when the process goes. So it really is that kind of end-to-end process that we're managing across the country.
So many thanks to Ross Armstrong from Warmworks, to Richard Orr from Riverclyde Homes, to my co-host Kieran Finlay, the editor of the Scottish Housing News, and this is Jimmy Black saying thanks for listening and we'll be back in a couple of weeks.